Hello, everybody, and welcome to the last podcast, the last Tech First for 2023. Wow, 2024 is just around the corner. Today, we're going to talk about VR, and we're going to talk about where VR is going to go in 2024. VR is an interesting space, right? Kind of doldrums in the consumer space, but there's some cool new tech. We see the MetaQuest Pro, we see Quest 3. App Store downloads indicate that the Quest 3 is doing unexpectedly well. At least unexpected to me. And of course, we have Apple Vision Pro coming out in maybe Q1. No, we'll see if we can buy it in Q1. Of course, that'll likely be low volume, but it might just show the future of what is actually possible. So big question, what can we expect in 2024 for VR? To chat, we have Rolf Dillenberger. He's a founder and CEO of VR Direct. Welcome, Rolf. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
I am not well. I've come straight out of bed for the past couple of days and sleepless nights. Last night was actually my first good night in a while. I've had the flu, so I'm kind of sick. So I'll try and mute myself if I break into a coughing or whatever the case might be. But I wanted to do this. I wanted to have this chat because it's kind of a space that's near and dear to me. I've bought many of the VR headsets that are out there. And I've had a similar experience with so many of them where I use them, get into them, buy a few apps, buy a few games, and then kind of just, you know, I'm tired. It's the end of the day. Do I want to take that out, set up a boundary, and launch? Or I could just pull up my phone. But Apple Vision Pro is coming. Quest 3 seems to be doing really well. Are we on the cusp of something new and something, an inflection point, perhaps, upwards in the VR market?
Yes, absolutely. I use the term inflection point a lot in recent weeks with regards to the state of the VR market. I truly believe that 2024 will be a remarkable year for VR, seeing breakthrough and wide-scale adoption, especially in enterprise adoption of this technology. Consumer, to be fair, probably not going to be the breakthrough year next year. We're still going to need a few, two or three more iterations of the hardware and the whole ecosystems behind that in order to make it a real consumer success. You mentioned some of the typical issues that people have with setup of the devices and, you know, the availability of entertainment and game content that's really compelling. But in terms of enterprise adoption, I absolutely believe 2024 is going to be the breakthrough year.
So I want to talk about all that stuff, the consumer stuff, the enterprise stuff. I'll just hit on some of the enterprise initially. My son-in-law actually works in a company that is a medical VR company, and they do surgeon training, how to do this type of operation, that type of operation. You can do it in VR. You can do it 100 times, get good at it, and then you can actually do it in real life. That's one area where I could see a lot of growth in VR, especially because we need way more doctors. I live in Canada. We have a doctor shortage here. I think the same is true in many countries, and we need better ways of training them. What other areas are you seeing that are of interest for enterprise?
I mean, the area that you mentioned, like training and, you know, skill advancement and so on, that's clearly the number one use case that we see all across industries and enterprises. I mean, it has become, just like you mentioned from your background, this has become some kind of a commodity already in with regard to HR applications. So we see a big group of use cases, everything tied to HR. This can be employer branding applications, recruiting fairs, like showing a typical workspace situations. Then of course, training, safety training is a very big area. A second group of applications that we see is, I would say, internal communications, virtual showrooms, virtual tours, you know, all kinds of information that you want to convey. And then, of course, the whole digital twin applications like simulations of real life factories, processes, whatever there is. So I think these are the, you know, the big use cases that we already see in the market. But to be fair, we are still in a phase of very much trial and error at a lot of enterprises. So I believe we will see, you know, many more convincing use cases that we haven't even thought of today in the month and years to come by many enterprises.
It's interesting, just to stick on the enterprise stuff for a bit before we move to some consumer stuff. It's interesting to look at the work from home sort of trends, right? I mean, obviously during COVID, everybody worked from home. Then there was a big return to the office thing, and the office buildings in the downtown are dying, right? And the businesses downtown are suffering and all this stuff. And there seems to be a return, another backlash against that and a more emphasis on a work from home. How does that play in the VR market for enterprise?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg, when he announced the Meta Quest Pro, he was claiming that the Meta Quest Pro will eventually replace the laptop as your number one work device. Yes. I don't think that this will happen fairly soon, but what's definitely happening is that more and more enterprises starting to acquire a larger number of VR headsets and definitely starting to equip their workforce with VR headsets. I mean, it's clear this is not something in a matter of days or weeks or even months. We're talking about, thousands and hundreds of thousands of VR headsets. We're not there yet in this situation, but it's clear VR headsets or VR is going to become another device complementing your laptop and your phone with regard to, delivering your workday.
That really brings up Apple Vision Pro, doesn't it? Because there's a couple things there. When Apple unveiled the device, they very clearly unveiled enterprise and consumer functions, or at least I'll say work and play functions, right? Your entire Mac sort of experience replicated in some sense. You're able to work on things. And then communications, sending a sort of a digital avatar and digital avatars of others appearing in your space. That'll be interesting to see how much of that is actually real and how much of that is actually usable.
I mean, the interesting thing about this is both Apple and Meta, the end game, so to say, is the B2C game, clearly. I mean, that's what they're going for in the long term. But both know that the short-term objective or the short-term challenge is to provide a convincing system for enterprises. Probably like both of us and a lot of other people that I know will have their first encounter with VR on the workplace, not in a private situation. I mean, leave aside the early adopters, the tech geeks, the nerds, they might have bought VR headsets, but the mass of people will have the first encounter with VR at the workplace. So we're in an interesting situation that both Meta and Apple at the same time kind of have to build and start to nurture some kind of an entertainment and content ecosystem that eventually is compelling for end users to take the buying decision at some point in the future, but at the same time have to build a really good work kind of device for your workday, right? And that enterprise people, IT people at enterprises like. And that's a bit of a challenge, I think, for both of these companies and all of the companies in that space to find the right balance between these two markets and target audiences.
I bought the PlayStation VR back in the day, the first version, of course. And I bought that one because my dad was not doing well and I wanted him to experience VR before he passed. And he did. And of course, I hooked it up for my mom as well. And she did the shark expedition, right? One of the trial things in the PlayStation VR. And she's going down and it was real to her. And she was freaking out. We had to rip it off her head. We have external video of that. It's hilarious, but not to her.
But, it's funny that you speak about it. I think one of the kind of mistakes that many of us in the industry did is that we hide people with VR in such a stressful content situation, right? I mean, really, when you think about it, a lot of times when I go to enterprises and I talk to regular staff and we talk about how they start implementing VR, people come back to me like, the first time I was wearing a VR headset, I had to look down,
Yes, you're on a skyscraper.
I was on a roller coaster. It was the most horrible experience. And then you start have to fight back ground for VR and tell them, well, it can also add value and it can be a great experience here and there. So
I never thought of it that way.
Now that the same thing that happens a lot in enterprises, which I can only warn enterprise executives, is ask people to buy VR headsets and then give it to your team and then be like, next week, Monday, 10 o'clock, we got to all meet in a VR setup and have our team meeting in a VR situation. That's the worst thing you can do, because the first experience of people is a complete kind of, you know, overwhelming situation. How do I use it? How do I set this up? You know, that you should not do this. The best, better get the headsets, let people explore this new technology. It's, if you're not a geek, if you're not a tech nerd, this is stressful for you in the first situation, right? It's not, most of the people do not like new technology just because it's new technology. You have to be slow and you have to explain and you have to convince people that this technology actually makes sense. That's also why I'm telling our clients at VR Direct that you should always think about a convincing use case for your first VR application, right?
Yeah.
Deliver something that really makes sense. I mean, you talked about the training of surgeons. That's, of course, you know, a high flying thing, but you know, safety training, how do I react if a fire breaks out? That's typical safety training scenario. People understand that it makes sense to have such a training in VR. And then, you know, you have a soft start in this technology, and that's how you create, you know, buy-in from your team on this new technology.
I kind of wonder if that's where Apple Vision Pro will have its greatest impact. And I understand that initially it's going to be a small run. I understand that at that price point, it's not going to hit the consumer market at large, and that it'll take some time for even Apple to get it right. But the interesting thing for me for Apple Vision Pro is the user interface is kind of you. Right?
Yeah.
Your hands, your gestures, your eyes, other things like that, things that are very natural. So for me, not a gamer, right? Don't play PlayStation or Xbox, not familiar with hitting buttons and X and Y or A and B and stuff like that. And so then that was one of the biggest roadblocks for me on Quest platform, is just having these controllers to point and the click to shoot or something like that. Very easy, right? But then what is the X or Y or this, our top or down button, you know, for this, in this game, what is it in that app, you know, where
all you end up clicking all buttons because you don't know what version
of, and you get dumped out of your app because you click the end button. Exactly. Right. So, you know, there's some challenges there. And obviously for power users, including maybe VR gamers or people who use VR for high end uses regularly, they're going to learn that. That's going to be second nature. It'd be just like some gamer, you know, their fingers whizzing over all the buttons and everything. But for others who are new, that's a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, to put things in perspective, I don't think the Apple Vision Pro is meant to be a mass market device. I mean, clearly, Apple, and the ones who know this best is Apple themselves, right? So everyone who's trying to judge the market entry of the Apple Vision Pro next year by looking at sales numbers doesn't understand the state of the market and the state of this device. This is like a first, I don't want to call it a beta device, but for a matter of fact, there is no existing ecosystem for this device. I mean, Apple, it's still, we know this as a kind of software developer in that space. Apple is trying a lot to bring software developers and content creators onto this new platform to create some kind of an ecosystem. But this is not something that can be done overnight, nor in 6 months, right? And if you build an ecosystem over time, that's the big advantage, by the way, of Meta, that they have already invested, you know, 3, 4, 5 years into building this ecosystem. Apple will start new. So the device, and you can already see this from, you mentioned the price point. This is a prohibitive pricing. It's not, they don't want the average person to buy this headset, because you're going to be disappointed with that, or you're going to find yourself in a situation that it's outdated in a matter of months, right? It might be outdated in 9 months, 12 months, whatever, because the development is so fast. So what they do is they will release it in a very specific way. You have to register. You can only get it in a store. I'm pretty sure that you will only be able to buy, as you said, small quantities, if not to say just one device per person. Maybe you even have to apply for this or something. So what they in fact doing is they tell the market, the industry, we are here now. That's the device. Look at the device, start building content for the device, you know, start thinking about, you know, immersive experiences. And in addition to your traditional 2D apps, if you're a software creator, if you're a content creator, but it's not meant to be a device that's really for the mass market. And then to the point that,
No worries. I just saw some crazy effect go over and I don't know what that is. That's something that happened. Like, I don't know, this side. I'm not sure where that came from. Anyways, please continue.
And then the second topic that you brought up is like the interface, the user interface. You mentioned the controllers and I totally agree. But I think it's going in the direction of like, let's say, hands-free usage, same with facial recognition, even, you know, recognition of how your mouth moves. So your avatar is actually adopting your facial expressions. Yeah. Avatars now have legs and, you know, the device is able to scan your body movement and so on. So I think, while I totally agree with your assessment at this point in time, I think a year down the time, we will be using VR, very intuitive, hands-free. So I don't think that there's going to be much of a problem in the midterm.
I agree. The interesting thing for Apple is you're right. On the enterprise side, they start at zero in terms of an ecosystem, in a sense. On the consumer side, they start at a pretty high level because if you're an Apple customer, your music is there, your movies are there, your entertainment is there, other things like that. One of the things they show is that movie theater screen that's 120 feet wide, you know, according to what it seems to be, right? Go ahead.
I know what you're saying, but I'm a bit concerned about this because ultimately what they were showing at the release of the device was basically 2D applications in an immersive setup. And then I think many people will be asking, why should I put on a headset to go through my picture gallery? Why should I put on a headset to do a phone call? All right. Probably the user experience of these applications are perfect on a smartphone. So you might run into a situation where people are like even questioning.
I think that's a super interesting point. And I think that speaks to your other point about the ecosystem. They have to show that because that's what they have right now. That's what's available right now. And so then they need the device to be out there. And then, like, imagine a movie that you're a part of. I mean, nobody's made something that you could participate in like that. That's an entirely different way of thinking, right? And so maybe that's more of a game-like thing. Other things have to be reinvented, reinterpreted on the Apple platform as well to be an immersive experience. I think that's a great point.
I totally agree. I mean, entertainment, where you interact with or are part of the story, that's going to be a whole new category of entertainment in the future, somewhere between movies and games. You're absolutely right. We haven't seen these. We have seen first, you know, concepts in this area, but nothing, you know, really remarkable yet. But I totally agree that's going to be a big thing. And of course, I understand that Apple, because they lack content for the immersive, let's say they lack immersive content in the first days, that they're trying to extend their existing content lineup, meaning, you know, your apps, your 2D apps to the VR headset. If you remember back in the days when Oculus, which is now Meta, had started, they were very keen on not having 2D applications on the VR headset. Sure. If you were a content developer and you uploaded an app that was basically, you know, showing like a 2D screen in front, they would reject it because you got rejected from the Oculus store in the beginning because it was not classified as an immersive experience, right? So Meta was going a different route here, and was because they had no mobile business, of course. I mean, they had a different starting point than Apple in that regard, but it ended up with forcing software developers and creatives to really create immersive content and immersive experiences. So I think that's going to be still quite some way to go for Apple. But on the other hand, they have to start somewhere. And I mean, extending your existing content to the new device makes absolute sense. But That's why I'm saying I don't think they want to make this a mass market device, because people will question why they should invest in this new technology as opposed to just continuing using their iPhones.
What I find really interesting, and sometimes you can connect too many dots. Sometimes they're just dots and they're not connected. Sometimes they are connected. What I find really interesting is Apple just released, I think it was a week and a half ago, an LLM, which is focused on animating people. You know, just give it a picture and boom, you can animate a person. And we know that, first of all, AI at Apple isn't amazing at the moment. We know there's a lot going on behind the scenes. We know with its privacy focus, Apple's focused on edge AI. That's certainly on the iPhone. That's probably on the Apple Vision Pro as well. And so be interested to see how that sort of stuff plays out. You're certainly going to need a lot of AI if you're going to have immersive experiences like a movie that you're a part in or something like that. Or anyways, so that's off in the future. We'll see what happens there.
Discussion this year, 2023, about VR versus AI or metaverse versus AI, especially with regard to Meta.
They're essential for each other.
Did they give up their metaverse plans because they're now fully focused on AI? I think what people don't understand, and you just mentioned exactly that, AI and metaverse or VR or spatial computing, whatever you want to call it, is something that will benefit from each other. AI will be behind the scenes. We will need AI to create content, and to be fair, not only for VR headsets and for immersive experiences, but this can take also immersive content to a completely new level. And then spatial computing or metaverse or VR is kind of the user interface, right? It's the way humans interact with technology or content provided by technology in the future.
Very cool. Okay, let's go back to where we started. We started at an inflection point, and you think that inflection point will be largely in the enterprise space. What can you talk about that you think will happen in 2024 in terms of that inflection point? How can we gauge that? Is that number of organizations that are participating in this? Is it number of devices sold? What's the right way of looking at that? What do you think will happen?
Well, that's a very good question. I think most important is people have understood that VR can create value and adds value to business operations, right? We talked about use cases before. That's understood. And I think we're getting to a point where as an enterprise executive, and I'm talking larger enterprises, I'm not talking about small, medium-sized enterprises at this point, but, you know, larger organizations, at some point, you don't want to be, regardless if you're an HR manager or a marketing manager or a operations manager, you don't want to be the last to start adopting VR, right? And that's just like, we see that at many of our customers. We have customers like Siemens and Nestle and other, you know, global brands. And, you know, when the first 10 security managers, safety managers start deploying VR in their area, the other ones are like, I don't want to be the last one to start with this technology. Sure. And that's something that you feel all across all organizations. Then, of course, what you mentioned, the hardware topic is still a tricky topic, especially for the IT people. The hardware options that you have, I mean, we all know you mentioned the Meta Quest 3, which is clearly the number one device at this point in time. You have Pico in the market, you have HTC in the market, Lenovo is entering the market. We talked about Apple. At the end of next year, we expect Samsung and Google to release a headset. So while this sounds like great competition and, you know, a competitive market, it's a nightmare for IT people and software people, because
I'll take one of each.
Exactly. You don't want to be the IT guy who took the decision to go with, you know, just making this up with HTC or with Pico or with Meta, then our whole organization starts adopting this device, and then a year later you find yourself having taken the wrong decision. So that's, you know, aside from all the data security topics and the privacy topics, and, you know, it's really a challenging thing, but I'm really confident and I truly believe that this will be solved by enterprises sometime next year. We still have many enterprises out there who have not officially certified a VR headset in their procurement. So even, you know, global organizations, if you buy a VR headset, you're somewhat in the gray zone. You're not really compliant, right?
Illegal.
So it's accepted, but not really. And that's, I mean, you cannot expect a wide scale adoption of a technology that you cannot even buy with your internal procurement. But these are all like the little steps we're going to solve next year. I'm sure all of the big organizations will certify a VR headset next year. Then everyone internally can buy or get a VR headset from internal procurement, just like you get a laptop or a mobile phone or a printer or whatever IT device. IT people or the organizations will have guidelines and, you know, compliance regulations, how to use these devices, how to use this the content. So all these steps that makes the technology like a normal thing, just like we have with laptops and mobile phones. And then this will get to a point where, you know, you cannot afford to not have a VR strategy. I think it's fine if you're an executive and you're like, hey, I looked at the market and probably not yet the right time for me in my area, like whatever marketing or to get started. But I don't think you can end 2024 with like not having a VR strategy. That seems like at some point it's gonna fall back on you. And to me, it sometimes feels a little bit like 1998, 1999 with websites, right? When suddenly we had this situation where this had like this rush where suddenly everyone wanted to have, you didn't want to be the last one to have a website. And I think a similar thing is going to happen with VR in the enterprise space next year.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Raul, thanks for taking this time. I know this is a week that most of us are trying to take off, and I think that you're doing some of that. I'm doing some of that. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas, and I wish you a very happy new year. Thank you again for this time.
John, thanks for having me. Get well soon, and I wish you also a good start to 2020.